Shabbos Daf Yud Zayin, so we're continuing to go through those 18 laws that were passed that day. Another one of those 18 is a Mishnah, which says all movable items can function as an ohel for Tumah. We know that an ohel basically means if you're under the same structure as something that is Tumah, then you can become Tumah, even if you're not touching it, even if you're not right by it. Since you're under the same structure, the Tumah spreads to the entire area, like if you're in a room or literally an ohel, a tent, under the same tent. So that's how an ohel works. So this Mishnah is saying that all movable items can function as an ohel for the Tumah, as long as they have the thickness of a goad. Where Rabbi Tarfon says, this is not actually what the Chachamim said. Really, what's the case? Why did we get this? Why do we think that this is what happened? It's because there was one time that someone was holding a goad over his shoulder, and then that goad passed over a grave. So since it passed over a grave, the goad became Tamei, and it made the guy Tamei, not because it functioned as an ohel, making him an Ava Tumah, the highest level Tumah, but rather it made him Tamei through touching him, making him a Rishon. So basically, the goad passed over the grave, the goad became Tamei, and it made this guy Tamei as a Rishon through touching him. But not people were mistaken and thought that this guy was Tamei because the goad functioned as an ohel, but that's not true. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, I'm going to reconcile all of this. Rather, all movable items can make someone Tamei through touch, if you're carrying them, when they're the size of a goad. So anything that's the size of a goad can transmit Tumah through touch. They themselves, the movable items, can become Tamei no matter what their size. And a movable object can only be an ohel when it is a tefach wide, which a goad is not. As Rabbi Yonai says, what is a goad? It's something that's less than a tefach thick. And it can't be an ohel on a d'oraisa level if it's less than a tefach thick or wide, but its circumference is a tefach. So the Rabbanah made a gzera on the circumference of a goad, which is a tefach, because of the thickness of a tefach, meaning it has to be a tefach thick, but because a goad is a tefach in circumference, they made a gzera on it that should be able to transmit Tumah through touch. So according to Rabbi Tarfon, who says that this is not one of those laws, what's his case? What's another law that he would count as one out of the 18? It's what Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, that Kusi girls are considered needy does from their birth, and like we had said, on Daf Tez Zayin, and he agrees with Rav Meir that the case of the vessels under the pipe would constitute one of those 18 laws. So that's how Rav Tarfon gets to 18. So what's another case of those 18? It's a brisa which says that when you... So it's this brisa which says that when you harvest the grapes for the wine press, Shammai says that they can become Tamei, and Hillel says they can't become Tamei. So Hillel says to Shammai, why are you only saying that the grapes can become Tamei? Why not other things like olives? And Shammai says, well, if you keep provoking me, then I'm going to extend it even to olives. Meaning if even you can't tell the difference, you, the great sage Hillel, you can't tell the difference between olives and grapes, then I'm going to be forced to extend this to olives as well. So they voted, and Shammai won the vote, and Hillel was submissive, and he was humiliated before Shammai, and that day was as grievous to Bnei Yisrael as the day of Chet HaEgel, because Hillel was humiliated. So Shammai and Hillel passed this decree, and it wasn't followed, but their students later came along and passed it, and then it was followed. So what's the reason for this decree? Rav Chanina says it's a safeguard against harvesting the grapes into Tamei baskets, because we therefore say that the grapes are always going to be Tamei, lest some of the juice come out of the grapes, and then it will make the grapes wet. And then when food is wet, it can become susceptible to Tumah. So we don't want to have these grapes in a Tumah basket, where they might come to become wet, and the person won't realize, and then they'll contract Tumah. However, to safeguard against this, we just say the grapes are always Tamei. However, this makes sense according to the opinion that says that Tamei vessels, if you have a Tamei vessel that liquid was unknowingly ended up in, then that's significant. Meaning, in our case where the liquid unknowingly ended up on the grapes, that the Tamei vessel assigns significance to it and makes it able to become Tamei. However, what about the opinion that says that it's not significant? Meaning, okay, great, you didn't know that the grapes got wet. You don't want them to get wet. It was totally unknowing to you. So therefore, according to that opinion, it wouldn't become Tamei. So what does that opinion say? What's the gzera put in place for? So Rav Chanina says it's a gzera against if you harvest grapes into pitched baskets, which are waterproof. So even though you didn't know that they got wet, since it was waterproof, you showed that you wanted to keep all the liquids in there, and it was basically considered like it was with your knowledge. Another answer is that Rava says It's a gzera against having clusters, where if you have the clusters of grapes, you're going to have to break them apart, and then those grapes will leak their water, and they'll get their juice, and they'll get the other grapes wet, and then they can become tamei. And another answer is Rabbi Ravua, who says that sometimes the farmer will go into the vineyard, and he'll check his grapes to see if they're ready to harvest, and he's going to squeeze the juice out of them, and it's going to land on the other grapes, and then he's going to go and harvest the rest of the grapes while they're still wet, and then he knowingly squeezed the grapes on and got the others wet, so then they can become tamei. So what's another one of these 18 laws? It's what Tavi the Hunter says, that the growth of truma is still considered truma, meaning even if you replant truma, it still has the same status of truma. Mizar Reisa wouldn't have the same status, but the Rabbanan came along and instituted that if you replant your truma, it stays as truma. Why? Rabbi Chanina says it's because we're worried about a stingy Yisrael who's going to replant his truma and make it chulin. Basically, if it didn't stay truma, then a Yisrael would just take his truma and just plant it in the ground, and then that what's grown out of there would become chulin, and he wouldn't have to give truma on that. So Rava asks on this, but if we suspect the Yisrael of being so stingy that he's going to do that, then we shouldn't allow them to go by Shmuel, who says that a single grain can suffice for truma. And since Yisraels don't do that, where they don't just give a single grain, then they should be trusted, and we shouldn't suspect them of going through all this process of replanting their truma to make it chulin. So rather, the gzera is that, according to Rava, is that if we're worried about tamei truma, that we don't want the kohen to hold on to it until the planting season, because then he's going to say, okay, this is tamei now, I'm just going to wait until it's time to plant it, I'm going to plant it, and then the truma that grows out of this won't be tamei and I can eat it. But we're worried he's going to hold on to it until then, and then he's going to come to eat it while it's just in his house by accident, he won't realize. So he said that truma retains its status even when you plant it, so he's not going to say, I'm going to hold it until it's time to plant, because even if he plants it, it will remain tamei. So it's another one of these 18. Ula says if you're walking on Erev Shabbos on Friday and then it becomes Shabbos, you're allowed to give whatever you were carrying to a guy, because they realize that people aren't just going to drop it there. They're going to come to carry it all the way home. And so instead of doing that, they allow them to just give it to a guy. So it's another one of these 18 laws. Bali says in the name of Avime Sanvata that the surim on the bread of a non that was baked by a non-Jew, the oil that was made by a non-Jew, and the wine that was made by a non-Jew, and having relations with the daughter of a non-Jew, these are all constituted as one law. These are one of the 18s. So fine. So that's the list of the 18. So according to Rav Meir, it's good because we have 18 laws. But according to Rav Yossi, we only have 17, because Rav Yossi said that when the water drips into the pipe by accident, that is not considered one of the laws. And we had answered before that he includes the case of the daughters of Kusi being Nidas. But at the end of the day, we see that even according to Rav Meir, Rav Meir agrees to that law, and it's necessary for Rav Meir to have that as part of his 18. So Rav Yossi only has 17, even with the daughters of the Kusi being Nidas from birth, we still only have 17 according to Rav Yossi. So what's another law for Rav Yossi to get to 18? Rav Achabar Ada says it's the going through this answer. Rav Achabar Ada says there's a gzera on bread because of the oil. But why do we say that oil is better than bread, that the gzera of bread should come from oil? Rather, it's that there's a gzera on bread and oil because of the wine of a non-Jew, and the gzera on wine came from the daughters of non-Jews, and that gzera on the daughters of the non-Jew came from doing Avodah Zarah itself. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak adds that there's a gzera on a goy child that we basically assign him the tumah of a zav, because we don't want Jewish children hanging out with these non-Jewish children, so we just said that they're tummy. So this is great, but according to Rav Meir, now we have 19, but rather Rav Meir counts in our Mishnah where we had gone through the 10, he counts both food and vessels contracting tumah from liquid as only one law. So the next Mishnah, Beis Shammai says that you can't soak ink, dyes, or vetch on Erev Shabbos if it's not going to be completely soaked by Shabbos, because then if it goes into Shabbos, it's going to be considered like you're still doing this malacha of soaking. Beis Hillel says you can do it. Beis Shammai says you can't put flax in the oven if it won't become heated before Shabbos. Beis Hillel says you can. Beis Shammai says you can't put wool into the dyer's vat unless it will become colored before Shabbos. Beis Hillel says you can do it. Beis Shammai says you can't put out traps for animals if there's not enough time for them to be trapped before Shabbos. Beis Hillel says you can. Beis Shammai says you can't sell to a goy, or you can't load his animal or unload his animal unless there's time for him to reach a nearby place before Shabbos. Beis Hillel says you can. Beis Shammai says you can't give hides to a goy tanner or clothes to a goy launderer, unless there's time before Shabbos for them to do the whole process. But Hillel says he permits it in this case and in all the cases stated in this Mishnah if you started the process while it was still day, meaning on Erev Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, regarding this case of laundering, my father used to give white clothes to a non-Jew launderer 3 days before Shabbos. Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, though, agree that you can place the beams on olives and grapes to squeeze out the juices on Erev Shabbos, even though the process is going to be continued into Shabbos. They both agree that that is fine. Shkayach.